This is Peter Aylward from Southern FM. We're at the live at the Kennedy Space Center with astronaut Rick Mastracchio. Welcome to the space show, Rick.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Rick, you've just recently returned from the STS-131 mission on Discovery, a very, very successful mission, and you completed three spacewalks. How was that for you as a career highlight?
Oh, it was absolutely a fantastic trip. It was a great mission, and we had our challenges. We had a few difficulties up there, but everything worked out at the end, and we were very happy with the results.
Terrific. So you've had three space flights. Your first space flight was in 2000, and then there was a seven-year gap, and you flew in STS-118 in 2007. Is that a normal sort of gap, and what were you doing in that seven years?
Right. Well, no, it's not a normal gap. Part of that seven-year gap was due to the Columbia accident. That was a three-and-a-half-year probably gap because of that. And what I was doing during that time frame was when we're not assigned to a mission or training for a mission, we actually work technical assignments for the astronaut office. So I spent some time working on upgrades for the space shuttle and other space station-related technical jobs.
I see from your profile that you worked a lot on abort and on asset and reentry systems.
Yes, that's correct. Even as before, I was selected as an astronaut. I was an engineer at NASA, and I spent a lot of time helping to develop the ascent abort procedures. You know, the space shuttle is a very capable vehicle. If it loses an engine during ascent, we have the ability to land, return to the launch site here at Kennedy Space Center, or do a transatlantic abort and land over in Spain or in France. So I've spent a lot of time working on those procedures.
So please tell me a little bit about your experience as a spacewalker and your general impression of walking in space.
Yeah, walking in space is first of all fantastic. It's every astronaut's desire to go outside their spacecraft, and you get a heck of a view of the Earth. I've been privileged enough to do it six times now, three times on 118 and three times on 131, and it's a heck of a job. You go out there, you're in this very bulky spacesuit, and you're handling very delicate equipment. So it's very difficult, and it's not really exciting to watch, but when you're out there doing it, it's quite challenging and very interesting, obviously. Every once in a while during the spacewalk, you know, we work very hard, and we're out there for 6.5 or 7 hours and work very hard, but every once in a while we get a few minutes to look down at the Earth, and it's always beautiful to look down at the large thunderstorms. In fact, we spent a lot of time going over Australia on 131 night passes over Australia, watching the thunderstorms and the lightning dancing through around the sky, and of course the southern lights were quite prevalent on this mission also, so it's a great experience.
You spend quite a bit of time in the neutral buoyancy lab in the swimming pool. Is there also zero G training in the aircraft, the short duration? Is that part of your general training, or is that part of the EVA training as well?
Right. Most of our spacewalking or EVA training is done in the neutral buoyancy laboratory, like you said. That's just a large swimming pool where we have mock-ups of the space shuttle and space station at the bottom of this pool, and we go in our training spacesuits and we translate around underwater. We do a little bit of training in the zero-G aircraft, which is basically just a large aircraft where we go out over the Gulf of Mexico and do parabolas, fly the airplane in a parabola such that we get a few seconds of zero-G. But most of the training is done in the swimming pool.
You've got a lot of experience in this industry, in this business. I see from your profile you start off with Hamilton Standard, which manufactured the spacesuits, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. When I got out of school back in the 80s, right after I got out of school, I started working for Hamilton Standard. I wasn't working on the spacesuits right away, but I was spent time on guidance systems and flight control systems and kind of worked my way up to where I am now.
And then you were a flight controller as well. Is that a lot of the flight controllers aiming to move up to be able to fly in space themselves?
I think a lot of flight controllers would jump at the chance to fly in space. But it's a great background for an astronaut, because as a flight controller, it's quite different than an astronaut, but as a flight controller, you get very smart on one or two systems on a very small portion of the space shuttle. And as an astronaut, you got to be fairly smart on all the systems, but not have the depth of knowledge as a flight controller. So it was a very good experience for me to start off as a flight controller.
Now we're a couple of hours from launch. You've done this three times. What were you doing at this time, and what were your thoughts and recollections each of those three times, especially I guess on the first one?
Yeah, what you're doing really right now is once you get strapped into the vehicle, you're strapped into your orange launch and entry suit. You're strapped in pretty tight. You got your helmet and gloves on. You're kind of bulky. You build yourself your nest, I say. You have different crew procedures on your knee boards. You have a knee board. You have various pieces of equipment with you. So you're trying to get everything situated and get that organized. That only takes a few minutes. Once you get comfortable with that, you basically just try to relax for a few minutes. It's probably about 2 to 3 hours, really not much to do. Maybe a few switch throws, maybe a few entries into the computer, but it's not a whole lot of things to do in this time frame. So really, you're just trying to relax and take it easy. Everybody tries to take a little bit of a nap if they can, actually.
And I could imagine it'd be difficult to take a nap, but it must be a lot of adrenaline pumping through, especially, I guess, in your first flight.
Yeah, there is a little bit. You feel very comfortable when you get inside the space shuttle because you spend so much time in the simulator. When you crawl into the real vehicle, you feel very comfortable there. It's like you've been there 1,000 times. So you really, for me, the adrenaline was not too bad. I was pretty relaxed and said, well, this is just like another simulator. And you just don't spend too much time thinking about other things. You just kind of concentrate on doing your job. And I tended to stay fairly relaxed.
And you were on the flight deck for ascent and landing on all the flights that you took?
I was on the flight deck for all the ascents, all three ascents, and two of the entries. My last entry, I got the option to ride on the mid-deck, which was a little bit different, but I was happy to do it. But yeah, spending time on the flight deck was a great challenge and really enjoyable, and great views out the window, obviously.
And you're responsible in that role for sort of secondary monitoring of systems, APUs, right, and that type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. As the flight engineer on my first two missions, basically what you do is you sit between the commander and the pilot. And the commander's responsible for basically the left side, all the systems on the left side of the vehicle. The pilot's responsible for all the systems on the right side of the vehicle. And the flight engineer, where I sat for the first two missions, is basically backing them up on all the systems. So anytime there's a procedure to work on any of those systems, you back them up, make sure they're doing the right thing, help them interpret any kind of malfunctions that may happen.
Tell me a little bit about the landing. A lot of people talk and you hear a lot of discussion about the launch, a very dynamic, very explosive process. But right, the landing is, I guess, a little more gentle. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the landing is quite a bit different than launch. Obviously, launch is very dynamic. The landing starts basically on the other side of the world. You basically are traveling about 17,500 miles an hour. We turn the space shuttle to face backwards, and we fire the orbiting maneuvering engines just to slow us down a little bit, a couple hundred miles an hour. Then, of course, we turn the nose forward again, and that slowing that down allows gravity to just pull us back to the Earth. So we have no engines running, and the vehicle is just a big glider, if you will, coming and returning to the Earth and here at the Kennedy Space Center. And it's not much different than an airplane, but the big difference is as we're entering the upper atmosphere, the high temperatures, the vehicle begins to glow. The nose out the front of the window, the different colors, it glows from whites to yellow, the oranges and greens and reds. The vehicle actually changes color as the temperatures outside change. So it's a really great light show, but it's not much different than an airplane right at that point.
Can you actually hear anything? I know you're in your entry suit and headphones, etc., but can you feel vibration, hear the vehicle?
Oh, yes, you can. You could actually, there's a few times where you transonic buffeting, you'll get a little bit of turbulence, if you will. You'll feel a little bit of that. And you'll hear a little bit of sound. Sometimes you could hear the vehicle, making some sounds as it turns and things like that.
Fantastic. Now, I guess towards the future, you've just come off a mission. You're an astronaut. There's only a certain number of slots left, and I think they're all allocated. What are your plans? What are your ambitions?
Right. Well, obviously, I'm done flying the space shuttle. I got three flights on the space shuttle, so I was very lucky to get those. And like you say, all the missions on the space shuttle are spoken for. So unless something very, very strange happens, I'm not going to fly in space shuttle again. So my only option is to fly as a long-duration crew member, and we launch on a Russian Soyuz rocket out of Kazakhstan. So that's the option I have, is to either retire as an astronaut or go become an expedition long-duration crew member. And I've yet to make that decision. I'm still thinking about it.
I guess that's quite a different role, quite a different type of challenge. It's a longer, right, longer session.
Yeah, exactly. Space shuttle mission is kind of like a sprint. You work very hard for 2 weeks, and then you come home exhausted, whereas a space station mission is a six-month journey, and you can't work at the same pace as a space shuttle mission, so it's more of a marathon type of thing. So, yeah, it's quite a bit different.
Mm-hmm. And do you have high hopes for the new direction that the administration set for going to private industry for crewed vehicles for ascent?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what direction we're going to end up. It seems like we're in a transition period right here, and we're trying to. There's still a lot of smoke, it seems like, and we're not. I have not been following it closely since I just returned 3 weeks ago, but I'm trying to get smarter on it. But I think no matter what direction we end up going, I think NASA will be very successful at it, and I think the manned space program will continue on.
Just have you ever been out to Australia at all?
No, I've never been to Australia. I've flown over it several hundred times, if not several thousand times, and it's a great place from space, and I look forward to actually visiting someday.
Please do. Tell me a little bit about being on the space station itself. Obviously, it's a much larger vehicle than the shuttle, and what's it smell like? What's it sound like? What's it feel like?
The space station is enormous. We had 13 people up there. We had two Japanese astronauts, three Russian cosmonauts, and seven or eight American astronauts up there. And I tell you, you could work for hours up there and still not see anybody. There's so many rooms. It's a good 10 or 15 compartments that are fairly large. So first of all, the enormity of it is just very impressive. The amount of experiments and research going on is also very impressive. There's a lot of activity going on, a lot of things going on. What does it look like inside? It kind of looks like a science laboratory. Most of the places look to. There's a lot of experiments hanging on walls. There's computers all over the place. There's wires and things like that. So it's not very. It doesn't look very neat and organized to the untrained eye. But science and laboratories are actually a lot of equipment. So that we have all the equipment on all over the walls, obviously, and in the different racks. It's a well lit place. Very comfortable. Very comfortable temperature-wise. Some of the modules are a little warmer, some of the modules are a little cooler, just like a house, if you will. And it's a great place to live. I don't think folks have any problem living up there, and there's obviously a lot of work to do, and they remain busy.
Very good. So, and also, the cupola had just been delivered before your mission. So what was that like? Did you have the windows open?
Oh, yes. We were allowed to open those shutters on the cupola quite a bit, and it's a great view. It's an incredible view of the Earth down below. And you get actually, while the shuttle was docked, we had an incredible view of the shuttle's payload bay also. So the cupola is a great place to do various research and experiments, but it's also good when we have to do robotic operations. When you're flying a robotic arm, right now most of it is done using camera views on monitors, which are, you don't really get that good three-dimensional view. So now with the arm operators working in the cupola, they're going to have a great view of the arm as they move the robotic arm around the space station and to do various tasks. It'll be much easier for them to operate that arm.
You've actually had a lot of experience with robotics and the software development for the robotics. Have you had any involvement in the virtual reality training that is also used?
Well, I didn't help develop any of the virtual reality training, but we do use the virtual reality training actually for the EVA or spacewalking training. We go over there for a few sessions, probably one session a month maybe during training, so we go over there probably 8 or 10 times for a mission. And we put on the virtual reality helmet and the gloves, and we get inside the virtual reality world and translate around and move things around. And it's kind of supplements the pool training that we get. So yeah, it's a great tool, great task.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you very much.